Series Overlooking the River at Harbor Park in Middletown every Tuesday at 7 p.m. through September 1st. The rain location is South Church.
Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. You're listening to WESU Middletown. Hello. Today I'll be talking to Netta Wattels about the importance of animals, their roles, function, and purpose in our lives. Netta is a world-renowned animal communicator, master of multidimensional healing, lightworker, healer, and teacher. Having communicated telepathically with animals since a small child, Netta became a professional animal communicator in 1994. Since then, she has successfully assisted thousands of animals and their human companions. Her teleclasses in animal communication are attended by students from all over the world. In addition to animal communication and healing sessions for animals, Netta offers services for her human clients, including Akashic Record consultations, tarot card readings, and preparation for surgery healings. Her website, raysofhealinglight.com, offers many articles and recordings about animal communication. Welcome, Netta.
Hello, Sima. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. I love to talk about animals and people and communicating with them.
And I love hearing about it. So tell me a little bit about your story. When did you become interested in working with animals? And tell me a little bit about your earliest experiences.
I've been communicating with animals since I was a little kid, and I didn't think it was anything special at the time. I could just always feel what they were feeling. We had cats and dogs and chickens when we were kids. And, of course, my parents had the chickens to sell eggs, but we all thought of them as pets. So what would happen would be that I would be interacting with one of the animals, and I would kind of know what they were feeling. And that was the main thing that I can recall about it, although there were some pretty clear communications, too. There was one cat named Silver who was actually belonged to one of my sisters. In those days, nobody spayed or neutered anybody. This was a long time ago. And so we lived in the country, and the cats would get pregnant and have babies. And Silver was kind of the dominant one in the group that we had, and she would take care of everybody. Most of the time, her litters were small, but one time she had five babies. She would come to us, my sister and me, and ask us to make her a bed before she gave birth. We just knew this, that this is what she was asking for. So we'd get her a nice box and some clean rags. She'd give birth. This time, when we went to change the bedding after the babies were all born and cleaned up, I noticed that she was counting them. Five was a lot. And as we took them out of the box and placed them in my sister's lap, she was right there supervising us. And as we put them back into the box with the clean bedding, she was counting. One, two, three, four, five. It never occurred to me before animals could count, but she could. So that was one of the earliest experiences where I can clearly remember specific message. Although I knew from my animals if they were happy, if they were sad. I had one cat myself named Tiger, very original, right? He was an orange tiger.
That was original. How many tigers have there been since then?
Well, I don't know. I think there's quite a few out there in the world, and little kids are naming them. But in any event, I thought he looked like Winston Churchill. At the time, he was sort of a hero, Winston Churchill was, to my family in the 50s. And he was very wise, and he would lie on my bed when I would do my homework, and it always felt like he was helping me do my homework. So that's about when I was little. But as I became an adult and I finally got my first horse, which I had always wanted, I had an amazing experience with Echo, who was an Arabian mare.
So I want to stop you just before you move forward. So how old were you as a child when you really began to recognize that you have this gift? And then the second question is, did you ever either doubt it or fear it?
Well, Well, I wasn't even conscious that it was a gift. It was natural to me. I was always communicating with animals. When I would tell my parents about it, their attitude was pat, pat on the head. You're just imagining this, dear. So I kept on imagining. I mean, the good news was I didn't get a lot of the severe negativity that a lot of little kids get. Nobody ever teased me about it. Nobody ever said it was stupid or crazy. They just said, oh, it's just your imagination, and dismissed it. So I just kept imagining. I mean, that's the way I thought about it.
And did you ever share with anyone? Did you tell your friends?
No, I don't think I talked. I don't remember. This was a long time ago, Sima.
Okay.
But I didn't know how long. It was a while ago. But the thing of it is, when at some point when I became an adult, I realized I had compartmentalized. I had this part of my life when I was with animals where I was always in conversation with them. And then there was the rest of the time when I was doing the official left-brained thing, going to school, learning stuff, being analytical, logical, the way everybody is trained to be in our society. It didn't become really clear until I read a book. Now, I was an adult by this time, by Penelope Smith, who is very well known in the field of animal communication. She's like one of the pioneers. And her book was called Animal Talk. A friend of mine who's a veterinarian was learning alternative veterinary medicine, acupuncture, chiropractic. And she came back from a course, and she came to see Echo, my horse. And she brought this book with her. She picked up on one of the tables during the break times. And it was by Penelope Smith. It was called Animal Talk. Little thin paperback, still in publication, available. Little how-to book. And I thought I was going to teach myself how to. I took the book home. My friend said, I don't have time to read this now. You want to read it? Yep. I took the book home. I sat down on my sofa. And like the good student that I had become, I went through carefully, step by step. And I read the first thing you have to do is have this basic attitude and belief. I have that. And then the next thing you do is this. Okay, I've already done that. And the next thing is you've got to learn to meditate and quiet your mind. I've been doing that for years. And I went through all the steps that way. When I got to, I guess there are seven of them or something, I get to the end, and I'm really shocked. Because what I had discovered was I've been doing this my whole life. It was as though somebody took down the wall between the compartments in my head, in terms of the way I thought about it, and said, yep, you're doing this. Now, I still didn't realize that you didn't have to be physically present, even though I'd already had a lot of experiences with Echo, where she was at the barn and I was somewhere else, and I could feel something was going on that needed attention from me with her. Either she wasn't feeling well or whatever. But I still thought I had to be at the barn. So I immediately jumped in the car, drove to the barn, and went in to see her and apologized. Oh, my God, this is absolutely real, and I've been treating you like some kind of dumb animal. She was an Arabian. There was nothing dumb about this horse. And I felt really guilty. So I'm apologizing all over the place to my horse. And I hear her response, and that was like the next big explosion inside me. Because she said to me, you take care of me, and I take care of you.
Lovely.
And I went, oh, my God. And that wasn't anything I was ever going to say to myself. My ego wasn't going to come up with that. And
sure.
And that was the second powerful message that I got. So this broke all the doors open wide. And then because I used to do the barn chores in the morning. I took care of 16 horses, cleaned stalls, fed, turned out, brought in, all that stuff. I knew all the other horses there. It was a boarding stable. And I started really consciously having conversations with them. And sometimes funny things would happen. There was one gal had this big, beautiful Palomino quarter horse. And she had him on the cross ties one day, and she's grooming him, and I'm cleaning a stall. This was on a weekend. And she's going on about, oh, he's such a big dummy, he's so stupid, but I love him anyway. And I started to say, you know, there's nothing stupid about your horse. And I hear him go, shut up. Don't tell her. I don't want her to know. She'll make me work hard. And so I stopped in mid-sentence, and I started choking with laughter. And she's going, what do you say? What do you say?
That's hysterical.
I mean, I don't know if she believed I was really communicating or not. Because this was what I was just beginning to tell people. I could do this. And a lot of folks were poo-pooing and pulling my leg and all that. But I couldn't tell her because I had a respect that he had a feeling and opinion he didn't want her to know.
We're talking today to Netta Wittels. She's a world-renowned animal communicator. And we're talking about the importance of animals, their roles, function, and purpose in our lives. So you call yourself an animal communicator. Is that a term you came up with? Because people might call you a pet psychic. So is there a difference between the two? And how do you operate with your clients, with people who would like to avail themselves of your services?
This is a many-part question, so let me try to take it a piece at a time. The term animal communicator, I got that from Penelope. And I believe that was the term that she was using. I never thought about myself as being a psychic. When I started doing this professionally, people would say, are you a pet psychic? And my answer always was no. And this is the reason why. When I started doing this professionally, this was at a time when I was very consciously intending to be aligned with higher guidance. So I had asked for higher guidance, you know, what's my mission? Why am I doing this for other people? What am I supposed to, you know, what's my soul mission? What's my purpose? And the message I got was that my mission really is to teach. What is it that people need to learn about animals? Well, they're not like tarot cards. They're not something you read. When people think of the word psychic, they think of a reading. And people do still call me up and ask for a reading. But animals are sentient, sapient beings.
What does that mean? Okay. The general public won't understand that term.
Yeah, I know. But I say it that way anyway because I think it's important. Sentience is the ability to feel. We've all been told that emotions belong to humans. And you know, this is the official position is that animals don't have feelings. Now, anybody who has an animal knows that they can be sad, they can be angry, they can have a lot of emotion. But the official scientific position is that they don't. So that's what sentience is. Sapience has to do with intelligence. Now, there's a lot of evidence today that there are many species that are doing things that indicate high-level intelligence, like making, you know, there are birds that make tools. There are, like, monkeys and, you know, different species, some of which make tools. And there are even, you know, birds build houses. So a lot of the attempts scientifically to separate humans from animals is always a goal to say that humans are somehow higher up on the scale of the hierarchy and animals are lesser, and therefore we're higher because we can do this, this, and this, and this, and they can't. And a lot of that is collapsed. But anyone who can figure out how to survive, who has opinions about things, who can share their thoughts and feelings in a conversation, is not an object. They are consciousness. And so I call myself an animal communicator because I'm having a conversation, just like you and I are talking now. And that's what one of the things I want people who come to me for my help to start knowing, that they can also have conversations with their animals. They may not be able to hear everything the animal is saying, but animal communication is an expansion of intuition. We all have intuition. It may not be something that we've learned to call upon when we want it, but we can learn to call upon it when we want it. And that's why I can teach classes in animal communication.
I do want to ask the next question, which is, why did you choose to work with animals as opposed to humans? But I also want to ask you, does your ability stretch to the point where if you're walking down a street and somebody walks by with a dog, or you're in someone's house and they have pets, are you always on? Is your transmitter always recognizing their thought patterns and their feelings? Or can you turn this off so that you only address it when you're doing your job?
I think for me personally, I can turn it on and off. In other words, I don't have to be inundated with a flood of stuff coming in. Because humans are all telepathic too, and one could really drown. That's something I think I learned when I was very young. I think my mother was very telepathic, and I had to keep her out. This is something I sort of figured out in retrospect. But there are people who've come to me and say, you know, everywhere I go, I just am flooded. And I don't know what to do about that. And I've tried to help them learn to create boundaries for themselves. But I want to get back to the second part of the question you asked previously, if I may, about how I do my sessions.
Yes.
Because having said that, I want people to understand that this is a conversation with another being who is equal to a human in terms of their feelings and their thoughts, although they're different. The way I do my sessions is kind of the way we're doing this call, which is I'm on the phone with the human, and I'm telepathically connected with the animal. The animal can be anywhere on the planet. I haven't experimented yet with off-planet, but who knows? It could be anywhere in the universe. One needs to be open to possibilities. And so it's kind of like being at the United Nations. If you've ever seen a film of what goes on at the UN, you have people there who speak many different languages, and somebody is in the front of the room at the podium speaking. And anyone who doesn't speak that language can put on a headset and get a translation that's live and simultaneous to the speaker.
That's a wonderful analogy.
So that's what I do.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
And it's just so amazing for people who have never had this experience before to get on the phone with me and to have me talking to their animal while I'm talking to them, because I'm describing to the human everything I'm experiencing. I'm asking questions of the animal. They can hear all of that. My mouth just goes and goes. But I'm simultaneously sending and receiving with the animal. And I just think that's the best thing, because if there's anything to be negotiated, worked out between them, I mean, most of the time people call me because there's a problem that needs to be solved or a situation that needs to be addressed, and everybody is there to participate. It's not like I have to go, okay, first I'll talk to you and I'll write everything down and then I'll go talk to somebody else. It's all happening. So we can come to the end of a call and have a plan of action. This is what the human is going to do. This is what the animal has agreed to do, hopefully. Hopefully everybody's going to do what they agreed to do. But so we have steps that can be taken to work towards creating a win-win for everybody.
Are there any times when you get information you choose not to pass along?
Yes.
What would be some of the reasons for that?
One would be if the animal asked me to keep the confidence.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started out doing this, there were certain things I was uncomfortable or unsure about saying to the person on the phone with me. For example, if the animal started talking about reincarnation, does that mean that the human is open to reincarnation?
Right.
And when I first started, I think many more people today in the United States and around the world believe in reincarnation.
Sure.
But then Penelope Smith had always said, you know, if the animal talks to you about something like that, they're trying to get their person open to it, or they know it's okay to say it. Still in all, I have sometimes had my higher guidance come in and say things, and I'm like, how can I say that to this person?
Sure.
What I've learned is that anything I don't say during the session is probably the most important thing I could have said.
Yeah.
So consequently, I hold very little back now. Unless the animal says to me, I'm telling you this in confidence, and I do not want it repeated.
Break the
I have to honor this. Otherwise, why would the animals ever trust me?
Sure. So why did you choose to work with animals as opposed to humans? And maybe the question would be better served by, why do you think that you were called to be an animal communicator rather than have a resonance about doing the same work with just humans?
Well, you can't do the same work quite this way with just humans. See, the whole first of all, I don't feel I'm working just with animals. I'm working with humans too, because I have the human on the phone, the animal. My job is to help them communicate. What I'm doing, when I said earlier I'm teaching, through that process, I'm helping those people begin to make a deeper level connection with someone who is not in a human body, because we're all spirit in physical form. Some of those forms have multiple legs and wings and gills and tails that you can see externally, and some are in a human form. That's how I look at it. I think I was called to this because this is what my soul wanted to do, because I believe that we have purposes that come from before we incarnate. And this is something that is joyful for me to do, meaningful, empowering other people I mean, sometimes what I'm doing is I'm helping people understand, okay, this is your animal's perspective on the health issue that you're concerned about. And your animal, when you go to the veterinarian, doesn't understand what the vet's talking about, because the vets lots of times don't take time to explain even to the human. And so sometimes what I do with my clients is I suggest, here are questions you can ask the vet while you're right there with your animal right there. Even if you know the answer to them, this will help your animal understand what's going on. And, you know, for most people and most animals, if you understand what's going on, it reduces anxiety and fear. And then afterward, you and I, or you directly with your animal, can talk about the choices, the options.
I live my life in a way that would probably resonate with you. And yet, the simplicity of the message you're giving today is another reminder about how there are signs all around us that we choose or overlook in guiding us through our life journey. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. The one thing about people is that they're disconnected from nature. They have lost their connection. They're not grounded. They don't spend time in nature. They spend time texting and doing other things with machines. They have lost their connection with themselves and with the world that they are a part of. You cannot live on this planet without being a part of nature.
Yep.
All right? So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a very spiritual thing. I mean, from my perspective, there's nothing that isn't spiritual. But for now, the most important thing, I think, for humanity, well, I shouldn't say the most important, one of the very important things, is to reconnect, not just with other humans, but with the natural world. We're not whole when we're not connected, and we're not going to be connected with ourselves when we're not connected.
Sure.
And animals are in our lives to help us reconnect. And so part of what I do is help people connect at a whole new level with their own animals.
So do different animals serve different purposes? And,
well, that's true on an individual level as well as on a species level.
So how would that look? And also, is there a hierarchy? What animal would serve the greatest purpose on Earth or in our lives? Does it work like that?
I'm moving away from the hierarchical way of thinking about things because I find that it creates a lot of false understanding. Every species on the planet has its niche, has its purpose, its role, both in terms of physicality and in terms of spirituality. And you take any species out, and you've created a hole that has to be compensated for. And, of course, we're losing a lot of species now on the planet, and the whole ecosystem is in uproar.
I was thinking that while you were talking.
As I say that, I mean, I can say with a visceral sense in my body of truth that there are some species that have really large-scale purposes. The whale song, which travels for hundreds and hundreds of miles under the ocean, is at least in part designed to maintain balance in the tectonic plate. On land, the elephants have had a similar role with some of their really deep sounds that are way lower than human hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a friend of mine who had started out as a student of mine in animal communication, one day writing me a letter and saying that this particular spring she was outside in her garden listening to the birds one day just before the trees had started to even put out buds. And she got the clear knowing that the bird's song is what calls the buds out of the tree. I mean, there is such subtle interaction and connectivity that's in nature, that every time I learn something like that, I'm astounded. Because the minute I read it in her letter, it was like my whole body said, yes, of course that's true. Every animal who lives with a human has their particular purpose for being with us. Often they're here as a mirror to reflect stuff within us that we need to clean up. Sometimes they're here as a spiritual teacher. I remember one client, one time this gal called up and she said, I need you to talk to One of my cats, I have two, but one of them has been following me around for weeks, meowing and meowing, and I don't know what she's trying to tell me. I didn't know anything about this woman. I tuned in with her cat, you know, tuning in. I made the telepathic connection. And the cat said, fantastic, somebody who can understand me. Quick, take this down. Cat had just been bursting with things she wanted to say. And so she didn't want me to do anything but write notes. Just she had to get it out fast. So I wrote it down. And what it was a set of four or five things that she wanted her human to start doing on a regular basis, one of which was meditation. And most of these things were spiritually related. So I didn't know, again, didn't know anything about the woman. Turns out she was very spiritually awake. She was taking courses with someone who was a trans channel, and she was very excited to get all this information. This is why I say I have to trust what the animal tells me and just say it. So that was really great, and she was very pleased. And then a few months later, she called me back. Her cat was walking around the house, staring up at the ceiling and meowing. Same cat. So she was really eager to know what the cat was doing. And again, I tuned in with the cat, and the cat said, oh,